board.
Hello? Can you... is this working? Okay.
Yep, I can hear you.
I can hear you too. Okay, welcome to the first episode of brand new innovative movie podcast called Old and New, where we look at new releases in theaters and then classic releases on top of everything in between. So we want to talk about movies because we love movies. And I'll be your host, Jake, with my rotating cast of friends to give their thoughts and opinions on all types of movies. And joining me today is one of my good friends, Juan. How you doing, Juan, today?
Pretty good. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, pretty good. It's almost Halloween, so we almost got that in there. So, you know, it's the end of the month. It's October. I was thinking, you know, talk about probably the movie that's made the biggest splash this month, and that, of course, would be Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, or his role in Joker, directed by Todd Phillips. There's a lot to be said, and we're definitely going to dive into our opinions on that, but... where should we start in discussing the movie?
I think that one of the things to mention that a lot of the critics that I've seen at least haven't quite touched on is the cinematography, the color palette. It was excellent.
Oh, it was phenomenal. And I just, I loved how it looked, and I just loved how, like... It felt like Gotham felt grimy. It felt like a really bad city with really bad crime.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Like it had, it wasn't like, you know, a cheesy superhero movie where, you know, and like it, that kind of ties into the violence in the movie. People are like freaking out about it because it's actually like set in a realistic fashion, the violence is, mm-hmm. while like a typical Marvel movie just shows I don't know what the proper term is, but it's toned down.
It's definitely something that you'll notice is bringing up with the Marvel movie example. Many of the violences that are shown in Marvel movies feel like a set piece. Like
absolutely. Absolutely.
It felt like every hit in this movie in Joker, of course, every hit felt natural, organic, painful, very well illustrated.
I agree. Like, you just felt... everything, like the emotions were there. It's a very emotional movie, and like I don't know, my thoughts on it have varied all over the place because, you know, I really like the movie, and I think uncontroversial statement, the best part's Joaquin Phoenix, without a doubt.
Definitely,
one of his best performances, without a doubt. I think, I don't know how he does it so well, but like the role he does, it's not like any other version of the Joker I've ever seen. He really makes it his own, and I know that's like a cliche statement, but, you know, he didn't look at other Jokers for inspiration. He looked at stuff like, you know, political assassins or mental health patients, and he wanted to portray the Joker in a way where it felt, what's the proper terminology? It felt like a psychiatrist could not properly diagnose him. Like, it had to be set to where... You know, he's such, like, a product of Gotham, I feel, you know. And the movie does a proper job of, you know, displaying, you know, the world shitting on him and how he kind of has to bounce back from all that. And I think it did a good job of showing that. Just the more, it's one of those movies, the more I think about, the more stronger it gets. Just, you know, his laugh, his Joker laugh is fucking good.
I guess.
I mean, it sounds so painful, but so like perfect. And I don't know, what do you have to say about like Joaquin Phoenix from your point of view?
I mean, just excellent performance all around. One of the things that I was reading into is for his laugh, he was actually studying patients of laughing disease, like the maniac laughing disease.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the...
And that's, like, an actual real thing, too, which I like. They didn't, like, just make up some mental illness. Like, they're trying to be faithful to that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. The fact that, again, it was such a strange timepiece. It felt like it was set in the 80s, but with the aesthetic of the 50s.
Yeah, I mean,
material.
Right down to the fact that, like, In the movie, it uses the original Warner Brothers logo.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's very I kind of compare it to like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, in the effect that it like just transport you to another place in time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood feels like 1969. Joker feels like the 1980s. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a good like reminiscent, and it transports you there. And you know, I was reading about. I read the IMDb trivia before earlier today, and Joaquin Phoenix said the two most difficult things he dealt with was one was the Joker laugh,
mm-hmm.
just getting like the right tone to get like the right balance where it sounded sad but it sounded passionate. You had to go through all that, but he also said the hardest part, like one just first played up acting, was the scene. After he kills the three men on the subway and he's in the bathroom, they kept talking about that part in rehearsal and they didn't know what they were going to do. And then what sort of happened, they just let the cameras roll and he kind of just did it and it turned out fabulous.
Yeah, it definitely felt not necessarily, you know, when someone like us, you know, normal people, would be placed in that situation, we would either freak out or try to manage it. And he instead just let
He just embraces it. And yeah, and just, oh man, you know, yeah. And this movie's killing it at the box office. That's one thing to note. Analysts are saying it's going to become the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time.
Really?
It's going to surpass Deadpool 2, which is really fucking crazy to think. And the fact that this movie has been so controversial, and I really don't understand why. Because people get freaked out by violence, or they get freaked out by realistic style violence in movies, and people, I don't know, like, why do they feel this movie's going to have a bad impact on people?
Well, this all recently traces back to, you know, if we look at it, you know, realistically, the whole incel movement that's going on recently.
Oh, yeah.
You know, marginalized groups being able to speak up on the internet and becoming from a meme to an actual threat.
Yeah, that's so bad. Like, the incel movement, definitely, I mean, and if you actually watch the movie, I don't see Joker as that. I feel like he just has, you know, mental, or Arthur has mental health problems, but like the incel movement's just another cringe factor.
That's another thing that I feel this movie touched upon well in comparison to other Joker performances.
Yeah.
Which of course everyone compares to Heath Ledger, so.
Yeah, the most iconic. Mm-hmm.
In that sense, the Gotham of the Dark Knight trilogy and of Heath Ledger already had itself established before Joker. So Joker was a byproduct of that Gotham.
Yeah.
And what the Joaquin Phoenix Joker was able to achieve was show that an image of somebody that you might see, you know, as a strange case can very easily become a hero for a new revolution.
And that that worked really well in the final scene because it's kind of, like what you said, it's an instance where, you know, Gotham became a product of the Joker because he goes on the show, you know, he does his thing, shoots him, and then gets arrested, and then the riots start.
Mm-hmm.
And you really see that. Yeah. I mean, that's the moment Gotham became Gotham, and that's the moment where the Joker became the Joker. But it's also ambiguous because, like, is this the Joker that became Batman's villain?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this, like, inspired a different Joker? Maybe this was, like, the icon that inspired, like, a copycat or something like that. And then, I guess, one of the more controversial aspects, not, like, on this, I mean, from, like, comic book point of view, what do you think of the possible chance that Joker, Arthur Fleck, is possibly Bruce Wayne's brother?
Ooh, yes. That was something that took me kind of by surprise when they first mentioned it. The idea that he could be, you know, related, that love affair first happened. And to some extent, this is something that this movie did extremely well in comparison to all the other performances. It left so many blank details that could or could not be proven.
Yeah.
It left your interpretation to be what the Joker is. Not necessarily here's his life, but here's his life, here are some facts, here's how he perceives them. It's up to you to make your own truth.
It doesn't spoon feed you, you know, and that's the problem with, I mean, it's like what Scorsese and Coppola are saying in that they're just theme park attractions. Joker, I disagree with that statement, but Joker is very much its own vision. Like it's kind of like, what's the term? It's like a loose, you know, you look at something like Constantine, which is definitely more of like a DC character piece. Though I think Joker is a little bit better, but you know, you're going like a different style than most comic book movies. You're going for a different aesthetic. Though this movie caused me to rewatch two of the movies that influenced, or rewatch two of the movies that highly influenced it. It was Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy. And the movie does take a lot from those, but I feel like in Taxi Driver, Travis Bickle, he didn't really have the world shit on him. He kind of just saw how bad things were, and that's why he went crazy. While in Joker, it displays more of like, oh, the world was unfair to him.
Yeah.
And, but it, I don't know. It just kind of showed how people are in society. You know, they're vengeful. And maybe it, you know, stands true more than now than it ever has. And, you know, there's so many things I've seen that kind of show, like, there's the tiny details, like, you know, the fact that, you know, he's a chain smoker, mm-hmm. or, you know, or something like, you know, he hides in the fridge, you never see him eat, yeah. stuff like that. It's just, you know, they put in all this detail for the extra flavor. And it, I think it really works in hindsight about how this guy interprets the world and Gotham in general. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, what do you think of, like, when people say it's, like, not an accurate depiction of mental health? Do you buy into that, or...?
I feel that, of course, you know, there, it's very difficult to make a movie that is an exact depiction of mental health.
Yeah, you know, even, like, Oscar bait movies don't do it. I mean, look at, you know, Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump, mm-hmm. or Sean Penn and I Am Sam, you know, they don't really... They're acting, definitely. I don't know if they really studied. Like, the one true example I could think of is there's this movie called Awakenings with Robert De Niro, where he plays a patient that was in comatose for about 30 years, and then he comes back, and that is a really believable performance, but usually it's mental health's not portrayed very well in movies or in general. Yeah. And I actually think the movie did a pretty good job of trying. I think people are just overly sensitive, and
yeah, I can see
they want it to be perfect in their eyes, and to me that idea is... I don't know. I mean, I don't know what people were expecting.
I don't know. I think that people had their expectations set high, you know, with the cast, with the talent behind it.
Yeah.
But they weren't quite expecting the punch that this movie was going to bring.
No. And I wasn't expecting, like, when he kills when he kills Murray Franklin at the end of the movie, that was like a holy shit moment. Yeah. That was like, oh my fucking God, like, what has it come to? What, like, ugh, it's so good. Now, I what I want to do is kind of just go through the movie, talk about any highlights you have, what stuck out to you. We can start at the beginning.
All right, so from the beginning, what really stood out to me is, again, as I was saying, even just looking at the formatting of the cinematography, the lighting.
Yeah, again, so well shot. So it looks incredible. Mm-hmm. I hope it gets an Oscar nom for best cinematography. It just looks amazing. And I really do love the gritty look. I really mm-hmm. think it makes the movie, like, it feels like Dungy. And I think, like, Joker's suit at the end, really, like, it's a good contrast mm-hmm. too. Like, the weird world, like, it's starting with him and the clown movement. But back to what you were saying.
Back to what I was saying. Oh, something that maybe this doesn't hold up true for everybody, but it definitely did for me. If you notice some of the extras throughout the movie,
uh-huh.
they are the same people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, some of them are the same people. Some dress the same.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
You start seeing the clown mask early on from, like, the moment the shooting happens. You start
seeing
the clown masks. And there's a theory that when there's driving, just to jump a bit ahead forward, when the reports first occur and you see that...
Oh, person, like the subway murders?
Yeah. When the subway murders first occur and you see the person driving by on the taxi with the mask, there's theories that that was the same woman who was in the subway with...
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So she recognizes him and starts wearing it.
And that stood out to you a lot?
Mm-hmm. It stood out to me. It felt like... Yes, it was a criminal community, but it was a close-knit community still. Everybody knew what was happening and wanted to make their own changes.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that works well because I like the theme in that they don't like... you know, this is the first movie that kind of paints Thomas Wayne, Bruce Wayne's dad, as kind of like a bad guy, you know, almost like a Trump-type billionaire who doesn't really give a fuck about the poor and, you know, he's just in it for himself. And I thought that turn was really interesting, especially that scene in the bathroom The other scene in the bathroom, to clarify, when the Joker encounters Thomas Wayne, sees him in there, and kind of like they question each other, and that was really good. And it definitely leads into the ambiguity of if Bruce Wayne and Arthur Fleck are, you know, brothers or not. And the movie does a really good job because, you know, later in the movie it's revealed like his mom supposedly adopted him, and, you know, she let an abusive stepdad beat her and him. But then it also hints that it could be the other way around because there's a letter between Thomas Wayne and her that illustrates that maybe he did have her committed because of his influence. Maybe he didn't want like an illegitimate son to be announced, you know. That type of stuff's really interesting. And that scene was really good. Like, the scenes that really stick out to me, I like the scene in the subway, and then the follow-up scene in the bathroom is extraordinary. Like, how that scene is executed is really good. And just, you know, I think Joaquin Phoenix does a good job of displaying both sides. You know, he definitely displays a sinister side, but he also is very sympathetic in the role. You know, you definitely cope with him. He's just trying to make ends meet. You know, he loves being a clown. He wants to be a comedian. That's his dream job. And, like, I could kind of tell he really liked kids in the hospital scene, and he didn't mean to drop that gun in the hospital, but it was just kind of circumstance. And then when that happens, along with the subway scene, it just sets off a chain of events because, you know, he killed those people, his work rejects him, all this stuff is coming down, and then you're kind of thinking to yourself, like, how much further is it going to advance? And his mom goes in the hospital. Like, the whole movie is about, it's very much about just build up, you know. Sure, it builds up and builds up. But the final scene on Murray Franklin delivers so well, just how he kills it. And I don't know, man. Like, you know, it's just so conflicting. And then I think another thing that I really enjoyed was, it was a part I didn't like at first, but then I liked it, is his love interest, Sophie, or supposed love interest. The girl, she's also this girl, her name's Sophie, I think, and then she lives at the same apartment as he does, or same apartment complex. And then the movie, like, depicts them having, like, a romantic relationship and him spending time with her and her daughter. And, like, when you first see it, it seems like kind of just a typical romantic storyline and stuff, and then when you find out she's like him dating her and all that is in his head, that really like changed the whole scope of it. You know, it really shows how deranged he's gotten since then. There's definitely so many layers you can get into through there, and there's definitely so many ways you can look at just a social, like, just a mental decline, you know, as displayed in movies like Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy. You know, these people are like that. I have a strong affinity for anti-heroes because I like that, you know, they don't play by the rules, and the movie focuses on them. And I think this is a good example. And we really don't get a lot of movies like that anymore, because movies kind of always need people who are good and then the villains represented. But I like when movies are more not as pertaining to who's the bad guy and who's not, you know. And just the supporting cast, very good too. Thoughts on just Robert De Niro as Murray Franklin?
Oh, Robert De Niro. I have to say, it's a bit of a childhood dream to see Robert De Niro hosting a talk show.
That is awesome. Yeah, and he does a really good job. I think he kind of, the same, like, in King of Comedy, he really sells being a stand-up comedian. Yeah. This movie, he really sells being a talk show host, like Jay Leno or someone like that. You really sense it, and he does such a good job. And I'm glad De Niro's kind of getting more away from those, like, terrible comedy movies, like Dirty Grandpa and Little Fockers that he did in the 2000s, and he's getting back to, like, the more serious work because he's doing this movie. And then The Irishman's coming out later this year, which I'm stoked for. And and then his mother, Penny, did a really good job. And I looked up the actress to see if she was from anything I knew. She's not really, but she was in a couple TV shows and stuff, an American Horror Story. But this is the first time I saw her, and I thought she was really good as his mom. And it kind of showed how showed how it was kind of like Psycho, you know, he was so dependent on his mom, and then you know, now Psycho went for like a much more different turn, you know, but this movie, and then when he kills her, what was your reaction to that scene?
Dude, that scene, it was interesting that for the first time in his life, he felt like he was getting the truth. And, you know, for somebody like the Joker, again, this is something that I think the movie absolutely nailed, is his perception of the truth, while based in reality, can also be affected by your mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So he could have just as easily, you know, if he had still loved his mother, considered everything that they've been through, waited for her to relapse from her coma, you know, come back to normal, and then they can talk about it.
But no, he didn't feel it. He just killed her.
Just killed her.
He was like that betrayed by what he found out. Like, he stole the mental health records from the asylum, and he just felt like so betrayed, like he couldn't live in this life anymore. Like, what's the line he says before he does it? It was like, I can't remember, but it was something along the lines of like, I could see the truth now and stuff like that. I don't remember the exact phrase, but it was very powerful. And then probably my favorite scene in the movie is a little after that. Well, my two favorite scenes in the movie, I'll talk briefly about them. Again, we're just going through the highlights. My first one is probably the scene at the comedy club where he debuts his set. And like, the timing of that scene is perfect. The fact that he doesn't laugh on cue with them, he laughs like a split second after. And then when he goes up to do his open mic set, he does a really good job of like showcasing the nervousness, and just how, you know, he's like, he's able to like kind of grasp these people and get them to, you know, see his side. And then, you know, people, they think it's funny, and then he gets a spot on Murray's show, and that kind of sets a whole other plot development in. And then my second favorite part would probably be when the people he worked with at the clown place he worked at, I can't remember, I think it was just a party clown company, and then you had the person that gave him the gun visits his apartment, and also the little person clown that comes in. And then he fucking kills the guy that gave him the gun because he ratted him out to his boss. And then you have that, like, really big scene with, what is it, the little person clown, and he says, you can go, and then he gets to the door and he can't open it, and then kind of leads to a moment of suspense and tension, and then Joker goes, he's like, you're the only one that was ever nice to me, and opens the door. That was a really good moment because it showed he was still human, and that was just how he saw good people in the world, and that he didn't want to punish them. He wanted to punish the people that fucked him over and really made his life pay. And that scene was a good display. And I thought that scene was a very good display of how he was sympathetic and that he did care for some people. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very good. And then,
I think one of the pieces that adds to all of this is Joker's journal throughout the entirety of the movie. You said it filled with all the jokes, all of his mentality.
Oh, and you want to hear something really interesting. The director, Todd Phillips, gave Joaquin Phoenix that journal as a prop before filming began. And Joaquin Phoenix, like, said that led to a whole, like, thing with the movie, with the character having this journal. He puts his jokes and all his thoughts in. And Todd Phillips just gave Joaquin Phoenix that as kind of like a prop. Like, oh, here's something to kind of use as a character basis. And it became so much more.
Yeah.
And that was a really good idea, and the fact that, you know, all his thoughts and his psyche is basically in this book is really good.
Yeah.
And though his psychiatrist, you know, she tries to, you know, figure out his problem, but it's really undetermined. You know, he's done all this unthinkable stuff, and it's kind of hard to like pin down what makes him tick, what doesn't. But, and, you know, like I said, Joaquin, he didn't want him to be diagnosable. You know, he wanted it to be, you know, a mental health showed where he has all this stuff happening. And then, but, you know, you have like the first part, like, or like, I guess the first three fourths of the movie, you know, you have all this build up and stuff. You have, you know, Joker, you know, him having his job, him losing his job, the subway scene, him encountering Thomas Wayne. You know, all that stuff's very well done, and I think it's very effective. But, you know, the scene that everyone's talking about, when he, you know, he becomes the Joker, he sports the makeup, and it really, it's at the same time when the detectives are going after him, it really starts you know, when he puts the makeup on, he does the iconic, you know, walk down the stairs and goes on Murray Franklin. You know, that's like such a good piece of filmmaking. Just give your overall thoughts on just the whole final act of the movie, because that like really made the movie for me, just how tense it was. And it's the part where he says society, which he said it so well too.
It was wonderful. Definitely that final act was complemented excellently by everything that was leading before it, building up that tension. When I first watched the movie, you know, in theaters with everybody, when they first start walking down to the stairs and they chose that song.
Oh, yeah.
The feature. It threw me off a bit because it was the first song choice that I contested against. You know, everything was so, you know, cinematic, set piece, and then you have this upbeat tempo. But then as everything led on, I figured...
Oh, yeah, you see the payoff, and it works a lot.
It works a lot better because to me, my mentality was thinking, okay, this song plays, but then he must have it in his mind, at least some kind of upbeat tempo as he's approaching his filming, approaching the Murray Franklin show, as everything's playing out.
He knows the end result, and he's like...
He's enjoying his way
out. Yeah, you know, it's a grand entrance, and now that staircase is becoming like... a huge tourist attraction in New York City. Like, people are freaking out about it. And then he goes on the Murray Franklin show and, you know, kills it, you know. And, you know, it really is a dream come true to have, you know, it's this, again, same with, like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You have DiCaprio and Brad Pitt together. You know, having De Niro and Joaquin in the same scene is, like, outstanding. And they really do well. And just, it's such a tense-filled scene because you know he has the gun and he's talking about how he killed these people, you know. And, you know, people are kind of disgusted at first. You know, they don't believe him at first. Like, oh, how could you joke about that? And then these people, you know, realize that this guy's not fucking joking. And it's like a real fucking thing. And then that moment where he fucking kills Murray just flabbergasted me. It was kind of like that scene in The Departed where Billy Costigan got shot in the elevator. Yeah. You know, you're just like, holy shit. What the fuck happened? Because I thought it was going to do something like, well, not exactly like this, but something similar. What was done in the Killing Joke storyline. In that version, the Joker killed the host and the audience just with poison gas. And I think this one did a better job. You know, he just shot him. And that's another thing I liked about the movie is when they came in, like, you know, the Joker's original origin story in, you know, the comics, you know, he fell into the ass and stuff. Yeah. I like that, you know, when Joaquin and Todd Phillips came, they wanted to do the movie. Their ultimate goal, well, they wanted to do two things. They wanted to, you know, tell a story that wasn't like any other comic book movie. Mm-hmm. You know, you take a character as iconic as the Joker and really, you know, give him his own spin, you know, give him his own, you know, way. Because if you look at it, you know, the Joker as a role for actors is like a playground. You could do so much with that character, so many, like, versions and how you could display it. Definitely. And that was one thing they wanted to do. And then... I read the second, like, major thing, like, they kind of had in mind. Oh, what was it? I had it on my mind, and I can't remember what it was. Do a different interpretation.
While you're thinking about that, something I wanted to mention is the buildup with Murray is perhaps one of the best boss fights that I've seen.
I agree. Well, it shows him, like, admiring him at the beginning of the movie. You know, he imagines him on his talk show. Yeah. And then that kind of hatred builds. Like, it goes from absolute love to absolute hatred because you see Murray kind of, you know, he makes fun of his video. Mm-hmm. And then that leads him to going on the show. Mm-hmm. Then that leads to, you know, all this chaos happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that really leads to, you know, these crazy events. And I remember what I thought. They wanted to do... Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix, they want to do, like, a character study, and they want to stick it to one movie. They don't want this version of the Joker to be in any other versions, like the Batman that's they're going to start production on with Robert Pattinson. Yes. They want to do a totally different version, and I think that'll be really good. But, and they all, back to, like, the Joker origin story, they wanted to do, you know, a Joker origin story that was plausible. You know, it wasn't set in, like, you know, the comic book version. He gets dropped in acid. That's how he gets the scars. The Dark Knight did a little bit of a better job, like, doing a realistic style. But this one, it's chillingly plausible, as Rotten Tomatoes says. You know, it shows that, you know, it could happen to a person like this. You know, it actually shows how a person like the Joker can become a Joker under realistic circumstances, and how you could see how a person like that can, you know, you could argue a genuinely good person kind of fucked over by society. You know, it kind of reminded me of another movie that came out this year called Brightburn. Did you hear about it, with the evil Superman?
Yeah.
And my main, like, it was, I thought it was a decent horror movie. It had some pretty good scares. But my main problem with that movie is unlike Joker, it really didn't show why this kid became evil. It kind of was like abrupt. Like, oh, I'm just going to start killing people. Okay. You know, it really didn't show a progression. You know, it didn't show the world being bad to him. You didn't see why this kid would become evil, like how Arthur did, you know? You don't see, you know, the ruin, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. And I think to some degree, every interaction that they've chosen, and this is, again, to bring up the point of how he built up, you know, from someone you can kind of be curious about to the Joker, is every interaction they've chosen with supporting characters was perfectly placed along his
life. It was a good timeline. You know, the scenes with his mom, the scenes with De Niro, the scenes with Thomas Wayne, you know, and that scene with Alfred Pennyworth and young Bruce Wayne at the gate. You know, they know, and you know, Joaquin Phoenix is so good at interacting with people, finding the right tone for a character, finding the right way to play a scene. And you know, it's just how much, you know, work he does into his roles and how much research he does. You know, he really is committed. And when you get an actor like Joaquin Phoenix on a project like this, it's really outstanding because you know the greatness he can do, you know, how committed he is to this project. And you know, he got offered Marvel movies and he turned them down because of like the multi-film contract. He got offered Hulk after Edward Norton left, and then Mark Ruffalo took it. And he also got offered Doctor Strange, and he turned it down. And the reason he did this movie, along with all like the other reasons mentioned, is he wanted to stick to like a one person, like a one movie deal, you know. We're kind of all over the place, but it's just how I talk in real life. You know, we come back to the scene. You know, the end. He's killed Murray. You know, he's being taken into custody, and you see the riots on Gotham happening in the streets. What do you think that's like meant to symbolize?
I think that kind of stepping a little bit away, right? Jumping to conclusions.
Okay.
That shows that the right place and the wrong mentality change history.
Absolutely.
That's what it shows with him. And definitely Gotham, as displayed throughout the movie, it needed a time to revolution. We knew before even studying Arthur himself, we were introduced to the situation in Gotham, how the poverty rate is up, how unemployment is up, how crime is going up. And Thomas Wayne planned to change this as a mayor, being his newest pitch, but not quite connecting to the people. And it's just an incredible buildup, just seeing everything else correlate.
Yeah, and it's not I don't feel it was abrupt, too, because the movie was very smart. I mean, the biggest example, obviously, is the subway killing, but, you know, it was right at the beginning of the movie, the fucking kids that take his sign and destroy it. You know, they're already showing how bad Gotham is in the state already, and then, you know, when the subway killings happen, it leads to, you know, the clown movement, you know, people dressing up as clowns. So it's building up throughout the movie so good. You know, it's not like, you know, it just happens, like this whole scene. And then when the whole riot happens and, you know, you see all this, it just becomes very poetic in a sense. And I know that's an odd term to use for, like, such a display of violence and carnage. And then the one thing that got me in that whole scene is, you know, Joker's in the back of the squad car. And they ask him, what do you think of this? Or, like, look what you started. And his simple response is, it's beautiful, isn't it? Like, that was fucking so good, that line. And then, like, kind of the closing scene of the movie, it goes back to him at a mental institution with his psychiatrist, and then his last line is like, oh, like, I have a joke, and then his psychiatrist is like, oh, what is it? And he's like, oh, you wouldn't find it funny. Then it just ends with him leaving the hallway with the blood on the floor, and it's ambiguous, you know, you don't know what happened. And I think that was a great way to end the movie, and it kind of sets a template to, you know, it's a good bookmark, you know, keeps you wanting for more, but doesn't give you too much. And it gives you a real clean picture of where the Joker story could start, you know, how it plays into Batman, or how it could influence, you know, the villains that went after Batman. So I think it wrapped up nicely. So would you agree?
I definitely agree with that. Yeah, it's something that, and I feel like this is, you know, the natural segue to this. I feel like if we stick to individual stories within the DC cinematic universe, there's going to be a lot more success until such a point that they can redirect, you know, until we forget about Justice League and all the other attempts.
Oh, yeah, because their fail, like, you know, Man of Steel comes out. They had no I don't think they had any intention to do a cinematic universe. And then they decided, oh, Batman v Superman will do it. Mm-hmm. But it really hasn't worked. I don't know if. Well, I've heard some things where it's like, A, they can't get the actors to commit to the multi-movie contracts like Marvel can. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Marvel does that gets these actors linked in more than DC does. Like, maybe DC just doesn't have more of a brand name, which is unfortunate. But the thing is, Marvel can make superheroes that were not well-known, like Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange, like super well-known in the cultural zeitgeist.
Yeah.
But DC, for years, the only two they really had to bank on was Superman and Batman, because that's the only ones they would be willing to market.
Yeah.
And now that times are changing, you know, Wonder Woman was a big hit. Mm-hmm. Aquaman made way too much money. But, you know, they're trying to experiment and showcase their other characters, which is a sign of the right direction. But the problem with DC is I think they rushed to Justice League with all that way too fast.
They definitely did,
And Justice League is so poorly made, and just rushing in all those characters, like, it just, you know, I don't know if they can, you know, redo Justice League and do it justice. It's such a, because the Justice League's so iconic, but I don't know if they should just stick to the individual movies and then kind of do a Justice League movie down the line. But not in, like, how the DCU did it, more like, you know, people have their individual movies, and then you can do a Justice League movie, but not like a crossover. You know, it just naturally happens, like these people encounter each other. Okay. I feel like it would be like phase one of the Marvel Universe, you know? And I mean, you wouldn't need like the cameos like Black Widow and Iron Man 2 and Hawkeye in the first Thor.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do stuff like that, but those movies were still standalone movies. I think most of the Marvel movies are pretty good standalone movies.
Yeah,
and DC just doesn't know how to do that correctly or do that properly without. And I think Joker is a step in. Well, I think Shazam earlier this year was a step in the right direction, too, because that movie was kind of separated. I mean, it had a few mentions to Batman and Superman, but this movie, I think, is also a new step in the right direction. And I'm actually going to look up what the next DC movie is. Is it Birds of Prey, I believe?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm excited for that movie or not. Hopefully it's better than Suicide Squad. Different director, and it's R-rated.
Yeah, different director, R-rated. And just from what we've seen in the trailers, a completely different art direction for both Harley Quinn as a character and everything that encompasses her version of Gotham.
Yeah, I could definitely tell that too in the trailer. And I think it'll... I really hope Jared Leto's not in it. If he cameos in it, I'll be pissed. Like, he should not. And then... Yeah. The whole controversy where he's have you read that? He's mad at the Joker movie. And he's mad at Joaquin. I guess he feels entitled. He should have been the star. But I didn't like him as the Joker. I think no one could have done what Joaquin did in this. Yeah, nobody.
Nobody, no.
You know, and I think it's and, you know, my stepdad Ralph was proud because, you know, this is the first Puerto Rican actor that's ever played the Joker. Is there another one?
None that I can think of, no.
I'm gonna look it up. Is it the first? I think it might be the first Hispanic person to play a Joker, but I'm gonna double check for sure.
While you're doing that, I want to bring like a separate segue. This is probably not something you follow, and that is the DC TV shows on the CW.
Oh no, I don't. I know of them, but I don't like. I'm not like totally familiar with them.
Then I'll entertain the masses.
Okay. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
So something that's been happening recently with the CW shows, and if you follow them, you would know about this. They're bringing in storylines that were left before the Flashpoint. Are you familiar with Flashpoint in the comics?
Yeah. They're trying to make, in the DCU, they're trying to make a movie on Flashpoint. The Flash movie they're trying to get off the ground is Flashpoint.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting take. And definitely that's going to be where they reset and make a proper DC universe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to be Ezra Miller, who played Flash in Justice League, or if they're going to go with an entirely different person.
Perhaps.
But you look at where the fuck is it? Cesar Romero, who played the Joker in the '60s show, he was Cuban and Spanish. Okay. So Not the first, but still the first Puerto Rican, which is pretty cool. And I like that they did cast a Hispanic actor as the Joker. I think that's a really good move. You know, we get superheroes of color that aren't Blade. That was the only one for years, wasn't it?
Blade, yeah, Blade. And then
I couldn't think of, because Black Panther didn't come out till now. They didn't. Green Lantern, it wasn't Hal John Stewart. It was Hal Jordan. Mm-hmm. X-Men, there was Storm, but she was a supporting character, you know.
Oh, yes, sorry. The tangent with the CW shows. So what they're doing right now is reenacting older storylines from like the 70s and 80s.
Oh, really?
So right now they have the Arrowverse, which is like, you know, the CW's Arrow is meeting with their Flash, Supergirl series.
So like in the DC television shows, like all those characters are encountering with each other
meeting each other. And they're reenacting like the Crisis series, so like Crisis on Earth, Crisis on Infinite Earths. They're introducing the concept of, you know, Titans, Darkseid. All that entire storyline is in the TV shows, which are not exactly connected to the DC universe. And while it's not a necessity by any means, I really like the direction that it's going right now, where, you know, professional, high quality studios handle these types of projects, and then the TV shows handle all the fanboy stuff in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good separation, because one thing I really dislike is fan service. Yeah. I think the new Star Wars movies have been kind of victim of that, of how fan servicey they get. But, I mean, maybe this one will be different. Who knows? I want to briefly talk about the... not briefly, but I kind of want to go into detail on what what movies DC has for the future. But before we do that... kind of to close off Joker, did you have any problems with the movie or criticisms?
Ooh, problems and criticisms.
I only have a few, but
Let me see. The first one was as I was saying earlier, that music choice in the beginning.
But then it worked when you saw it. Same with me and the girl. Yeah. Like, it was flat when I thought, and then when you figure out it's like a figment of his imagination, it really works.
What else is a big thing? Really, I think that was it. That was the only thing that kind of took me out of it.
I couldn't think of too many things that really, like, overtly bother me. Like, when I first saw it, I thought it was a tad pretentious, but then I, like, kind of looked... I thought it was pretentious at first. I thought it kind of gave the feeling it was deeper than it was. Yeah. But then I looked back and I realized I didn't think it was actually trying to be that deep. I thought it was just trying to display something. And to me, I have a new appreciation for that. The only two problems I have with the movie is the second one is it does have huge similarities to the Scorsese movies like Taxi Driver and King of Comedy. It does it's not like verbatim, and the movie does have like kind of its own style, but definitely takes plot points from those movies. Mm-hmm. But I definitely do see them as homages because why would they cast De Niro as in the movie, you know? I think that's a kind of they're paying tribute to Scorsese and his work. But probably the biggest problem I had with the movie is it's the end. I love the ending, except for one part. I don't like that they showed Bruce Wayne's parents getting killed. That part, I was not a fan. I felt that was forced in. I felt like you didn't have to show that. Now, I know, like, in the original 89 Batman movie with Tim Burton, the origin story was... the Joker killed Batman's parents. And I feel they wanted to kind of display something. Like, the result of Joker's actions kind of showed this. But I don't think it really was needed in the movie. I felt like if it was separated... Like, I felt like in the movie... How the movie displayed it, it felt like it kind of was like... They showed it because it felt essential to show his parents dying. And I don't know. It just... Like, it wasn't awful or anything. And how they did it, they depicted it pretty good. But... I would have probably just left that out, because I was fine with how they depicted him before, you know. They show Bruce Wayne as a kid, Alfred Pennyworth. That stuff works, I think. And it all just kind of stems to, I hate that, this is especially true in the Star Wars movies, like the new ones, how every fucking thing is connected in the world. Why? Like, like Luke has to be Rey's dad or grandfather. Like, that pisses me off. Like,
don't even get me started on Star Wars tangents.
When Rise of Skywalker comes out and we record our episode, we will definitely have some thoughts on that. Or maybe good. Maybe the movie will be killer and redeem the Star Wars franchise. I don't know, but... So yeah, that's our thoughts on Joker overall. We very much liked it. Yes. Very good movie.
Excellent movie.
Joaquin's definitely in the forefront to win Best Actor. He's up there with Leonardo DiCaprio for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I believe Robert De Niro is going to get one for The Irishman.
Okay.
Which, when that movie comes out, we will definitely do an episode on that because I'm psyched.
Sure.
How psyched are you for The Irishman?
Honestly, it builds up every day.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll do like a separate, like a bonus episode where we just talk about the movies we're excited for the rest of the year. But before we close off the episode, I kind of just want to talk about the movies the DC has planned for the future.
Right.
We talked about Birds of Prey. Any other thoughts? Just that, do you think it'll be better than Suicide Squad? It'll actually give Harley a chance to shine rather than the fucking annoying-ass dialogue she had in the movie, how she was played in Suicide Squad. It's a shame because Margot Robbie's such a good actress, and I feel like they really misused her in that movie.
Definitely. Seeing her as kind of like the lead of this new movie, you know, Birds of Prey, it's going to be interesting. But one thing that kind of throws me off from the trailer is, you know, they always show off like the best of, you know, the quickest version of the movie. And the dialogue is kind of throwing me off a little bit. I know the whole movie.
Like the writing of the dialogue?
Yeah, the writing of the dialogue. Like it's a little bit too on the nose with
Harley Quinn. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, we'll see.
But, I mean, Ewan McGregor's in it, and that's definitely... Well, I mean, unless, like, in your case, you were... When we saw Christopher Robin, you were the only cynic among the friends who said... Yeah. That movie was gay. Well, you didn't say it like that, but that's your thought, basically.
Oh, man.
So you didn't have a connection to Winnie the Pooh.
No, not me.
See, what, like which one of those, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's cool Ewan McGregor is portraying the antagonist. And it was a complete surprise when I saw him in the trailer. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And then that one's okay. It comes out February 7th, 2020.
Nice.
So it comes out pretty soon, in about 4 months, and I hope it's good. And then if it's bad, we will definitely let you know. And it's gonna be R-rated.
Nice.
And it has not super low budget, but it's lower than like it's 75 to according to Wikipedia, 75 to 100 million.
Okay.
Okay. And then the next DC, and this is the one I'm much more excited for. Wonder Woman 1984.
Oh yeah,
definitely. Kind of is going under the radar. I feel I haven't really heard. Is there a trailer yet?
No,
I don't think there is.
No, I haven't seen anything.
I haven't seen one. I'm reading up. They announced they're gonna debut it in December on December 8th specifically.
Nice.
So that'll be cool. But I'm really excited about that. Same director, same cast. I like that it's going to be set in the 80s. I love the first Wonder Woman. I think it's a really good movie. 4 stars out of 4. But Kristen Wiig's the villain. She plays Cheetah.
Oh, Cheetah.
And I'm not too familiar with Cheetah. And I'm looking at her picture. She looks like a Cheetah girl. Like the one from Thundercats.
Oh, yeah, that'll be interesting.
It's better than Amy Schumer as Cheetah. I don't hate her that much. Don't worry. Okay, and then they don't have too many. The Batman, which is the Batman spinoff film with Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
Interesting cast. They want the Riddler in it.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing. Riddler.
And it would be nice to actually see a serious take on the Riddler because Batman Forever had Jim Carrey as the Riddler, and that was very over the top.
Yeah.
Same with Two-Face in that movie.
Mm.
So I hope it's good. It's by Matt Reeves, who did Dawn of Planet of the Apes and... War of the Planet of the Apes, and those were two very good movies. I don't think Amy did Cloverfield too.
Oh.
Wow, I didn't know that. That was really cool. The Suicide Squad, that's also pretty big because James Gunn's directing it. He's writing and directing it.
Mm.
After he got kicked off of Guardians Volume 3, and then they a couple months later, Disney let him back on the project, which kind of bit him in the ass because they have to postpone Guardians Volume 3 because he's tied to the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But I hope the Suicide Squad is much better than the first one. They're calling it a standalone sequel to the first one, which basically means...
Just a reboot, but not really.
Yeah, it's like a half-assed... Like, you want to keep it in the same universe, but it's entirely different people.
Yeah.
You know, and Pete Davidson is in it.
Interesting.
From fucking Saturday Night Live,
yeah.
And Taika Waititi. from, you know, Jai Court. John Cena's in it. Margot Robbie, Idris Elba, Nathan Fillion. Like, this is a cast, man. And I'm really hoping this movie turns out good. It doesn't come out till August 6, 2021.
Okay.
So two more years to go, and I really hope it's good. I think James Gunn can really offer something fresh. He did with Guardians. Mm-hmm. He did a really good job with those movies. And I think I'm really hoping it turns out well. And then when it comes out, he can finally get to work it on Guardians Volume 3, and we'll see where that goes. Hopefully the Guardians series is not too much out of gas. And then, you know, they have normal ones like a Flash movie in development, yeah. Black Adam, Aquaman 2, mm-hmm. Blue Beetle, Deadshot, Cyborg. You know, all these movies are in the Batgirl, a new Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. Lobo, nice. Plastic Man, Supergirl, Nightwing. Yeah. You know, you have all these movies that DC had in development,
yeah.
but, I mean, no progress has happened on them at all.
Mm.
What do you think?
I think that's another unfortunate oversight. You know, now that, you know, it's been 10 years since the MCU, and we can finally look back.
Yeah, I mean, over 11 years. It's crazy. Iron Man came out in 2008.
Yeah. And that's sort of the thing that you can tell, to some extent, they already had the next 10 years planned.
They definitely did.
Yeah.
I even think they had backup plans because, you know, say Iron Man wasn't a big hit.
Yeah.
I feel like they would have kind of drawn something back. And I kind of have a conspiracy theory that... Batman Begins and Superman Returns were the start of maybe a DC universe, but they didn't really gross that much. Batman Begins grossed a little bit, but I think like $300 million or so, but nowhere near as The Dark Knight or Dark Knight Rises. And Superman Returns really underperformed. And they have similar titles too. Batman Begins, Superman Returns. Mm-hmm. I always wondered if those movies were connected, if they were going to do something with them. Mm-hmm. And then Superman Returns didn't do well, and they just did the Dark Knight movies.
Yeah.
So.
It would have been interesting.
But yeah, you know, back to what you were saying, I agree in that the DCU is definitely kind of like an oversight. They definitely did it because Marvel was doing it. They wanted to cash in, and it really hasn't worked.
Yeah,
no. Nowhere near as good. And the fact that they're changing their direction with movies like Joker is a step in the right direction. I like that they're not going for the Marvel formula.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if any of these movies are... going to be made.
No.
They're all in development.
Mm.
I mean, there's so many. There's like over 10 in development, supposedly in development. But that doesn't mean shit. That just means they could like have a script, or they hired people to write a script, and it's not even done. You know, they have all these things planned.
Mm.
But I mean, with the Black Adam movie, they're not scheduled to begin filming until July 2020, and who knows if it's going to get delayed or not. The only one I'm pretty sure about is Aquaman 2, just because the first Aquaman made so much fucking money that they're gonna do that, that they're gonna tie it in. So, you know, I hope DC goes for the best. It's kind of hard because, you know, the Marvel universe is kind of revamping itself because Endgame kind of, you know, was the Endgame, and then Far From Home is a bit of an epilogue, kind of brought the end of the Infinity Saga, so Marvel really has to change kind of the whole thing they're going to do, you know, because they ended that whole storyline, and I think DC's kind of doing a similar thing. They're kind of changing the way they're doing these movies and how they're working, and I think that's really important for both studios. So,
definitely.
Okay. So, yep, those were our thoughts on Joker and just the overall future of the DC Cinematic Universe. Want any final thoughts?
No. I mean, it was great being part of the first of many episodes here, starting something new and fresh.
Yes, I hope that we can continue. We don't have an exact schedule. I do want to do 2 a week, but probably when the podcast is just getting off the ground, I'll try to do 2 a week.
Mm-hmm.
But at worst, I'll be able to push out 1 a week for at least the new release. But I definitely want to do some episodes pertaining to some classic movies, especially when I get equipment set up at my house. Because as of this episode, we're recording at a different studio.
Mm-hmm.
not connected to us. So as soon as we kind of get that on the move, we can start filming a lot more episodes. But this was a great day, and thanks for being on, Juan.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And take care, everybody.
See ya.